Rāyānāṁ namaskṛtyā naraṁ caiva narottamāṁ devīṁ sarasatīṁ vyāsaṁ tato jayāṁ mudīrāyat nāyastā prayeshu padreshu nityāṁ bhāgavata sevāyā bhāgavāti tāṁ shloke bhaktir bhagavati nāyastikī. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer respectful obeisance on the personality of God in Narayan, on the Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, on the Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and on the Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering services unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome within the heart becomes practically destroyed almost anew, and transcendental loving service unto the glorious Lord, who is praised with transcendental hymns, comes into being established as an irrevocable fact. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 20, Text 53. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. To each one of these sons, the unborn creator of the universe gave a part of his own body, which was characterized by deep meditation, mental concentration, supernatural power, austerity, adoration, and renunciation. Purpose by Srila Prabhupada. The word virakti-mat in this verse means possessed of the qualification of renunciation. Spiritual realization cannot be attained by materialistic persons. For those who are addicted to sense enjoyment, spiritual realization is not possible. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that those who are too attached to seeking material possessions and material enjoyment cannot reach yoga samadhi, absorption in Krishna consciousness. Propaganda that one can enjoy this life materially and at the same time spiritually advance is simply bogus. The principles of renunciation are four. 1. To avoid illicit sex life. 2. To avoid meat eating. 3. To avoid intoxication. And 4. To avoid gambling. These four principles are called tapasya, or austerity. To absorb the mind in the Supreme and Krishna consciousness is the process of spiritual realization. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport to the 3rd canto, 20th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Conversation Between Maitreya and Vidura.
Devyas chaika kasha shushya dehasyam sham adaja yatat samari yoga yogridi tapo vidya vikratimat.
To each one of these sons, the unborn creator of the universe gave a part of his own body, which was characterized by deep meditation, mental concentration, supernatural power, austerity, adoration, and renunciation. So the previous verses were, they prayed, O Creator of the universe, we are glad when you have produced, what you have produced is well done. Since ritualistic acts have now been established soundly in this human form, we shall all share the sacrificial oblations. Having equipped himself with austere penances, adoration, mental concentration, and absorption in devotion, accompanied by dispassion, and having controlled his senses, Brahma, the self-born living creature, evolved great sages as his beloved son. To each one of these sons, the unborn creator of the universe gave a part of his own body, which was characterized by deep meditation, mental concentration, supernatural power, austerity, adoration, and renunciation. So,
Umagyanatabrandasya Gyana Gyana Salakaya Chashurim Milatamina Tasmaya Shri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manomistam Chapatam Mina Bhutale Sayam Rupa Gata Mayam Dadati Svam Vatantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadara Sri Vasri Gaura Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So Lord Brahma gave part of his body to his sons. This is an important point because we see that each one of us, we have certain qualities. Those qualities, many times, are inherited from the father. Just like when we're born, of course now they call it genetic engineering or chromosomes or whatever they want to call it. But basically what it boils down to is that whatever you're born, you inherit qualities from your father and mother. So those qualities are inherited on account of relationship. Similarly, the living entity originally has qualities which are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are the actual qualities. Just like we materially inherit certain things when we get a body. These things are there with the development of the body, just like you find that if your dad has a big nose, the son has a big nose, or something like that. Your dad has big ears, the son has big ears. There's all sorts of different things that you kind of inherit. Mostly, they say the son inherits the qualities of the mother and the daughter of the father, or some sort of combination like that. But basically, the qualities that we develop, they are on account of relationship. So here, Lord Brahma has created from his mind the great sages. And these great sages, as it explains here, having equipped himself with austere penance, adoration, mental concentration, and absorption in devotion, accompanied by dispassion and having controlled his senses, Brahma, the self-born living creature, evolved the great sages as beloved sons. So one of his sons, of course, is Narada Muni. Narada Muni is born from the mind of Lord Brahma. And the four Kumaras, they are also born from the mind of Lord Brahma. The Lord Shiva is also born, but he's born from the anger of Lord Brahma. So many personalities are coming. These qualities, because as it says here, that the creator of the universe gave a part of his own body, which was characterized. So, this characteristics, the word here, amsam. Amsam means part. So, similarly, because we are part and parcel of Krishna, we have the characteristics of Krishna. So, in one sense, you can understand Krishna by studying yourself, but in a very, very vague way. Very, very vague, because at the moment you are mixed up with matter and you're covered by lust, anger, greed, attachment, so many negative qualities. So in one sense, your identification is there with the material world. But at the same time, the characteristics are there in the soul. The soul has the same characteristics as God. One of the characteristics of God is renunciation. So the soul has the capacity to renounce. And that renunciation is very important for spiritual life. Because that is the only criteria of understanding that you're coming to some spiritual platform. If you are absorbed on the material platform, how can you be spiritual? That's like being in the water and saying, I'm not wet. You understand? When your nature is materialistic, then how can you be spiritual? You're not. Doesn't matter if you put on 500 dhotis and big chunk of tilak on your head. You're not spiritual just because you're wearing some robes, or because you're living in a temple, or because you mumble some mantras up and down every day. That doesn't make you spiritual. Without developing spiritual qualities, you're not spiritual. Just because you join an institution, or because you've got some stamp name mark on your head, that is not what makes you spiritual. What makes you spiritual is that you develop the qualities of God. And without developing godly qualities, then that means that you're not progressing in spiritual life. You're stuck up. So if you still have material attachments, Prabhupada mentions how that Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita that those who are too much attached to material sense, bhogeshvarya, those who are too much attached to sense gratification, they cannot perform spiritual life. Now, we can go through a few points there. That those, Krishna is explaining to Arjuna, when however one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. When one's intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. The humble sage, Now notice this word, humble. The humble sage. Because without humility, there is no question of spiritual life. So the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge. So humility comes from true knowledge. Those who are in ignorance, those who are in illusions, cannot be humble because they're puffed up by ignorance. Humility can only come by proper knowledge. It's not some sort of sentimental thing that you wake up and say, today I'm going to be very humble. It comes from enlightenment. So the humble sage is, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, an outcast. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. So the whole object of spiritual life is to become situated on the platform of Brahma, Brahma, Bhuta, Pasanatma, Nasochati, Nakanchati. Nasochati, Nakanchati means where there is no more hankering and no more lamentation. Hankering and lamentation are signs of bodily attachment. One who is too much hankering or is too much lamenting. Because those who are situated in Brahman, as Prabhupada says here, equanimity of mind, as mentioned above, is the sign of self-realization. If you have not got peacefulness in your mind, then you are not making spiritual progress. You see, if your mind is disturbed, too much agitated, then one has to be very careful, because the mind that is uncontrolled cannot perform spiritual life. Therefore, Krishna says, a person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. So Prabhupada says, the symptoms of a self-realized person are given herein. The first symptom is that he is not illusioned by the false identification of the body with his true self. So that's the first symptom of self-realization, that one should understand that I'm not that body. So if one is too much involved with bodily identification, then it is very difficult to be peaceful in his mind. He knows perfectly well that he is not his body, but is the fragmental portion of the Supreme Personality of God. So if we are the fragmental portion of God, then we have to develop the characteristics of God. Just like the sons of Lord Brahma, they had the characteristics of the qualities of Lord Brahma. And those qualities are given there, that those are characterized by deep meditation, mental concentration, supernatural power, austerity, adoration, and renunciation. So those sages, because they're the son of Brahma, they have all good qualities. Because Lord Brahma is a very powerful devotee of the Lord. This steadiness of mind is called sthira buddhi, or self-intelligence. So this sthira buddhi is very important because it's intelligence which is coming from the self. Now the self in Vedic literature is broke down to atma and paramatma. They are both the self. The individual self is the Atma, the Supreme Self is the Paramatma. So that Buddhi Yoga comes from the Paramatma. It is by the association with the Paramatma that one gets self-realization. See, the Lord says, I am situated in the heart, and I am giving the understanding that from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So forgetfulness of our true nature. For those who are too much attached to material sense gratification, then Krishna takes away that intelligence when the mind is too lusty or too angry. Then the intelligence is taken away. So one should not become affected by kaam, which means lust, krodha. What is krodha? It means anger. Anger is another manifestation of lust. People in the material world are very lusty. They want everyone to do what they want. They want everything to work the way they want. They want to control. They want to lord it over. And when they can't get that, they become angry. So that is not a good quality for a Vaishnava. Vaishnava should not become so much angry. He can become angry in a control sense in order to obtain a certain object. In other words, it may be necessary sometimes to become a little angry, but not to lose control of the senses. If you lose control of your senses, then you will become overcome by ignorance. So one has to constantly be vigilant. That vigil is that you control your senses under all circumstances. So too much lamentation, too much hankering, these are the things which you can, like a thermometer, you know, when you want to see your bodily temperature, you use a thermometer, isn't it? You can see. So you can use that thermometer, how much you're lusting after something and how much you're lamenting over things. These are general symptoms. Attachment and aversion is aversion is another sign of attachment. Or if one is very much angry, that's another sign of being very attached, a false ego. So as Vaishnavas, we should develop higher qualities. Now it says, such a liberated person is not attached to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. So these are very important. One is sthira buddhi. Sthira buddhi means self-intelligence. What is that self-intelligence that guides the mind to concentrate on the Supreme? So that intelligence is the thing which keeps you in devotional service, because your mind has natural attraction to try to lord it over the material world, to enjoy the material world, to make some material arrangement. Your mind is always attracted to make some material arrangement in the material world. So this sthira buddhi, self-intelligence, means not material intelligence. In the material world we see people are very intelligent. They're actually very intelligent. It's not that they're not intelligent, but that intelligence is misdirected. Misdirected because it's directed to the body. So they're very good at creating things for the body. They're very good at looking after the body. They're very good at making arrangements for the body and the senses. Like for instance, they have big restaurants and skyscrapers and beautiful jacuzzis and all these things and sex life and big beds that are like big cushions or something. They're making so many arrangements. Nice cars, press buttons and all sorts of things happen. But they're all bodily related. They're all bodily related. Just like if you go into a toilet and it has electronic flushing system or gold taps, or it has a sort of computerized toilet. But the thing is, you're passing stool, isn't it? What does it matter? You may have a big electronic gizmo or a computer for counting the amount of stool you pass, isn't it? But the point is, what is your business? Your business is to pass stool. So that's not very intelligent. You come into the material world to die. That's why you come here. You come here to die. Nobody gets out of here alive. As soon as you're born, your business from then on is to get old, diseased, and die. So all of their fancy technology may appear, just like they have big universities, colleges, so much sophistication, but their business is all about the body. It's the same as animal life. The animal, of course, he may not have a computerized car to go around him, but he's got four good legs. But to him, he still gets to where he wants to get to. Don't think that the animal is in the field lamenting because he didn't go down the M1 this morning. He's not lamenting. It has no business. His business is to get grass. Grass is there, so why should he worry? The only time an animal moves is when he's looking for grass, isn't it? So he doesn't need a car to do that. The reason we move around so much is because our mind is telling us so many things. So this is disturbance of the mind. So this sthira buddhi means, self-intelligence means, that intelligence which is absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That intelligence will save you from so many horrible conditions in the material world, because one will become As it says here, such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance. That trance means to always fix the mind on the Supreme Personality of God. And of course, in the neophyte stage, that's very difficult because we have no knowledge of God, no attraction. So generally, our mind is attracted to our bodies, to the objects of the senses, to the interaction between the senses and the sense objects. We are very much absorbed in these things. God is not on our menu. We haven't got God there at all. We have so many things. If you write out all the things that are important in your life, God is very, very far down on that list. The only reason we want God is because He might give us something better than what we're getting. That's generally why we put God on any sort of importance. Generally. Or He might get rid of some of our problems. He might be able to render us some nice service. So we don't mind checking in and seeing if He's around. He may not be there, but if He is there, He might be able to do us some good. But generally, that's about it. We want something from God, the stress, to get rid of the stress, in search of money, in search of wealth, in search of power, in search of something. So this is not the same as those who are the transcendental liberated devotees. They are enjoying the pleasure within. Now, what is the pleasure within? That pleasure within is, as Prabhupada explains here, the highest pleasure in the material world is, in terms of matter, is sex pleasure. The whole world is moving under its spell. And a materialist cannot work at all without this motivation. But a person engaged in Krishna consciousness can work with greater vigor without sex pleasure, which he avoids. You see? But it doesn't mean... And Prabhupada said, that is the test in spiritual realization. Spiritual realization and sex pleasure go ill together. A Krishna conscious person is not attracted to any kind of sense pleasure due to his being a liberated soul. Now, in the material world, this pleasure of sex life or attachment to things connected with sex life is very, very strong. People are very attracted to that. Now, a devotee, because he's absorbed in samadhi, means where the mind is absorbed in serving Krishna. In the beginning, that samadhi, of course, it's not that immediately one will be rolling on the floor, foaming and kicking his feet in the air and seeing Krishna in Vrindavan and going mad with love for Krishna. That won't happen for maybe many, many lifetimes. That is not our position. We can't always demand that Krishna has to give us something. If Krishna wants to give us that kind of love, then we will pray for that. But the point is that by engaging in devotional service, the immediate symptoms of engagement in devotional service is that one becomes more and more free from sex desire. Now that may sound like an easy thing, but it's actually not. It is very difficult for a materialist to give up sexual connection. Most people are very much attached in some way or another to these types of relationship. And pretty much the whole universe revolves around sex life. But whereas for a devotee, sex life is very, very, very low down and practically not at all in any kind of effect on him. For those who are pure devotees, there's absolutely no effect of sex life whatsoever. But the more one is advanced, the less sex disturbance he will have. The less he is advanced, the more he will have. So one can study. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses, O son of Kunti. Such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. So that is the point, that it's not a question of whether we're enjoying sex life or movies or girlfriends or boyfriends or cinema or going out on skiing or whatever we're doing. It's not a point. The point is that these things have a beginning and an end. Simple as that. They have a beginning, they have an end. And therefore, the transcendentalist does not delight in them because they are useless. Something which has a beginning and an end is useless. Why is it useless? Because that thing is temporary. The body itself is useless because it is temporary. The body has no actual sustaining power. It is here for a few years only. One may say, yes, but while I've got it, make the best use of it. That may be one's argument, that, well, at least I've got a body, and at least I can use it. But the things connected with the body are also temporary. So therefore, the temporary pleasure which one gets with the body are also very, very futile. For instance, a person makes so many endeavors for sex life, which lasts not for, say, a very long time, and then afterwards he has to spend 16, 20 years looking after a child. So for that little bit of pleasure, so much encumbrance is there, so many difficulties are there. Anyone who's brought up a child will know, will tell you, that it is an incredible endeavor. But the pleasure itself doesn't last very long. The misery lasts a long time. In the material world, the reaction for something is always much greater than the thing itself. So one may enjoy a little bit of pleasure. We see in so many instances in this world where people meet, boy meets girl, twinkle their eyes together and get attached to each other, then after that, simply suffering. Simply suffering. So the transcendentalist who's intelligent can understand that actually I want to be happy all the time. I want permanent happiness. I don't want these little flickers. Just like if you're thirsty and someone keeps flicking drops of water on your mouth. It's simply agitating you. It's not actually satisfying you. You need water, but you don't need this tiny little drop. So the living entity wants to be happy. But the material world is not capable of fulfilling that desire. So therefore, these temporary little pleasures of the material world, they're not satisfying to the transcendentalist. They're very boring. You can see, even those people who are in the material world trying desperately hard to enjoy the material pleasures, they become content. Familiarity breeds content. These things are not giving them any contentment, so they give content. People are not contented because they're not happy. As it says here, Nayam deho deha bhajam niloke shaitan kaman arati vidbhajam ye tapo divyam putrakaye nasatpam sudye yasmad brahma sukyam divanantam. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam. My dear sons, there is no reason to labor very hard for sense pleasure while in the human form of life. Such pleasures are available to the stool-eating hogs. Rather, you should undergo penances in this life by which your existence will be purified, and as a result, you will be able to enjoy unlimited transcendental bliss. So, here, Rishabhdev is explaining that there is no reason to labor very hard for pleasure, because these types of pleasures that you get in the material world, they come anyway. Just like we're not spending our whole day looking for pleasure. We still get pleasure. It comes. The amount of pleasure we get and the amount of pleasure any materialist gets, there's very little difference. But we're not endeavoring for that thing. Our endeavor is to serve Krishna. Now, it seems contradictory because here, Rishabhdev is actually advocating penances. Now, penances do not seem like the sort of thing that give you pleasure. But any devotee knows that when you perform penances for Krishna, you become actually pleased. Just like Sankirtan is a good example. Devotees go on the street on Sankirtan and it's miserable. It's a miserable occupation. Standing on the street trying to get people to stop who don't want to stop, trying to give them books that they don't want, standing in the weather that you don't want, because it's miserable, raining, or whatever. So all the signs of misery are there. And now on top of that, a lot of the times, we're miserable before we even get out there. Just thinking about going out there sometimes makes you miserable. So not only are the people miserable, you're miserable, the weather's miserable, the reaction between you and the people is miserable. But anyone who's done Sankirtan determinedly knows that after a while you're in bliss. But no one can figure out why. The same with Harinam. You go, before you go to Harinam, everyone's mental, oh, Harinam, I don't know, oh, it might be this, might be that, might be that. So, but once you get out there and you start chanting, then immediately you can feel, at least something can be felt, at least some sort of relief, if nothing else, you can feel some pleasure. But for the transcendentalists, it's a great sort of source of pleasure. The devotees that go out, freezing cold, 20 below zero, whatever, and they're ecstasy, giving out books. Same thing, people who don't want them, people who are miserable, miserable weather conditions, everything, but they're in ecstasy. And they're so eager to go out, you couldn't stop them, no matter what. So, in the beginning, as it says, that in the material world, that pleasure, which in the beginning it's like nectar, and in the end is like poison. That is the pleasures of the material world. In the beginning they seem like nectarine, but in the end you can see the poison. It's like having a poison. So, Maya's tricks are there, that in the beginning, in the material world, just like people, they may be attracted to have a smoke, and in the beginning they think, wow, this is nice, or whatever, whatever. But in the end, they're coughing up blood and lying in the operating theater ready to have their chest cut out or whatever. And it's like poison. So anything in the material world, in the beginning, may appear like pleasure. Same with relationships, and same with children. You see people, they bring children up their whole life, they work hard, they care about their children, and the children just turn out to be completely useless. You ask any parents, 95% of most parents lamenting over their kids. And the kids just turn around to their parents and say, I didn't care about you anyway. See, even the mother works hard, gets up at 4 in the morning, goes out working, single parent mother or whatever, bringing the kids up, and in the end they just spit in their face. So this is going on. But everyone thinks, no, but it's actually pleasure. They think that the pleasure is there because the mind is creating all sorts of trickery, illusions, because that is the meaning of Maya. Maya means not this. The very thing which you chase is not the thing that will do you any good. That is the tricks of Maya. So generally, most people, they are tricked into the idea that they are this body, they are the mind, and that somehow by making some arrangement in the material world, they'll be happy. Before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger. This is very important in spiritual life. One must be able to, as it says here, to tolerate the urges. It doesn't say that there won't be any urges. That's not what Krishna is saying. He's saying one has to tolerate the urges and check the force of desire and anger. These things have to be checked. Because as long as one has desires, then his consciousness will be polluted by those desires. Because desires means that related to the body. But Krishna consciousness is very practical because we also have desires as devotees. But those desires are to please Krishna. So therefore, a devotee is very much satisfied. Satisfied to be always trying to give pleasure to Krishna by using his body, by using his mind, by using his words. Thought, word, and deed. One is always thinking of ways to please Krishna, acting in ways to please Krishna, full of desires. The devotee is full of desires how to please Krishna. It is not that we are saying give any of this up. The devotee's senses are also very active. As it says here, that if one wants to make steady progress on the path of self-realization, he must try to control the forces of the material senses. There are the forces of talking, the forces of anger, forces of the mind, forces of the stomach, forces of the genitals, and forces of the tongue. One who is able to control the forces of all these different senses and the mind is called Goswami or Swami. Such Goswamis live strictly controlled lives and forego altogether the forces of the senses. Material desires, when unsatiated, generate anger, and thus the mind, eyes, and chest become agitated. So you can see that in people. Mind is disturbed. You can see the eyes. So it is the duty of a transcendentalist to try strenuously to control desire and anger. One must have control over desires and anger. Now, in Krishna consciousness, what we do is we dovetail that desire. Arjuna also dovetailed his anger in the sense that by killing the gurus, the Krishna. So we can utilize everything. Kshatriya means sometimes they become angry in the sense of if someone, just like Bhrikshu Maharaj, became angry with Kali, etc. But in a practical sense, a devotee must always utilize his desires to serve Krishna. And that service should be performed under certain degrees of tapasya, austerity. One must accept some voluntary austerity, because austerity is the thing which the senses don't like. They don't like it. The senses are like venomous serpents, snakes. They're always ready to bite. But what is their business? They want to bite into the material world. Just like we like to, our tongue, and we have these big teeth, our teeth, we like to bite into something to enjoy. We're always trying to somehow catch hold of matter in the form of intoxication, music, looking at cinema, television, nudie dance shows, whatever. Always these agitations. So in that way, the senses are always catching hold of material energy. So when you stop them catching hold, they become very disturbed. The mind becomes, just like say you say, okay, I'm going to fast for a week. Who can say it? Maybe Andrew. You can try it out, Andrew. Fast for 1 week and see how your mind will be all the time going mad when the food is there. Disturbance of the mind. Because that is the nature. The mind is the reservoir of material desire. So therefore, the mind doesn't like it. But the medicine for the mind is actually to perform certain austerities. But this austerity for us particularly is we must chant Hare Krishna mantra and also to read the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam to hear the nectarine pastimes of Krishna. But if we're not doing that austerity, then we will be in difficulty. Because the mind requires austerity. It must have austerity. Otherwise, without an austere mind, one cannot perform devotional service. It will be a farce. Because at any moment, the tongue can carry you away. The belly can carry you away. The genitals can carry you away. The eyes can carry you away. So many things can carry you away from Krishna. Because they're pushing. They're like a force. So at any moment, they can catch you. Just like that. So they're dangerous serpents, so you have to keep them locked up very carefully. Locked up means under control. So that is called Goswami. Goswami means one who controls. One who is in control of the senses. And Godas means one who is a servant of the senses. Those who are very eager to satisfy whatever comes into the mind, whatever whimsical desire is there. And one is very anxious to fulfill that desire. He is called Godasa. And he becomes more and more attached to lusty activities. Okay, let's finish here. Any questions? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranam Kijaya. Shri Prabhupada.